Chapter 7. Into the Water. As the boat lightly bounced on the waves, water occasionally hit the side of the boat and drenched them, but still it did not break their sleep. The threatening wind and water affected them as it would have affected mummies.
"Boys," said the cook, with a note of reluctance in his voice, "she's drifted in pretty close. I guess one of you had better take her to sea again."
The correspondent, awoken, heard the crash of the waves. As he was rowing, the captain gave him some wine, and this steadied his chills.
"If I ever get on shore, and anybody shows me even a photograph of an oar."
After another long silence, there was a short conversation again between the correspondent and the oiler.
Billy, will you take over for me?" asked the correspondent.
"Sure," said the oiler.
When the correspondent again opened his eyes, the sea and the sky were the gray color of dawn. Later, red and gold were painted upon the waters. The morning finally appeared with its glorious sky of pure blue and flame-tipped sunlight on the waves. On the distant dunes were many little black cottages, and a tall white windmill reared above them. No man, nor dog, nor bicycle appeared on the beach. The cottages might have formed an empty village. The men scanned the shore. A conference was held in the boat.
"Well," said the captain, "if no help is coming, we had better try a run through the surf right away. If we stay out here much longer, we will be too weak to do anything for ourselves."
The others silently agreed in this reasoning. The boat was headed for the beach. The correspondent wondered if no one ever climbed the tall windmill, and if then they never looked out to sea. This tower was giant, standing with its back to the problems of men. To the correspondent, it represented the calm of nature amongst the struggles of the individual. She did not seem cruel to him, nor kind, nor dangerous, nor wise. She was indifferent, merely indifferent. It is perhaps possible that a man in this situation, impressed with the indifference of the universe, should begin to see the innumerable mistakes of his life. They would taste bitter in his mind, and he would wish for another chance. A distinction between right and wrong now seems absolutely clear to him, and he understands that if he were given another opportunity, he would improve his conduct and his words. He would be better and brighter during an introduction, or better mannered when invited to a tea.
"Now, boys," said the captain, "she is surely going to swamp. All we can do is to work her in as far as possible, and then, when she swamps, pile out and scramble for the beach. Keep cool now and don't jump until she swamps."
The oiler took the oars. Over his shoulders, he scanned the surf.
"Captain," he said, "I think I'd better bring her about and keep her head on to the seas and back her in."
"All right, Billy," said the captain. "Back her in."
The oiler swung the boat then, and seated in the stern, the cook and the correspondent were obliged to look over their shoulders to contemplate the lonely and indifferent shore. The monstrous rolling waves lifted the boat high until the men were again able to see the white sheets of water sliding up the inclined beach.
"We won't get in very close," said the captain.
Each time a man could break his attention from these waves, he turned his glance toward the shore. There was a single quality in their eyes as they contemplated. The correspondent, observing the others, knew that they were not afraid, but the thoughts behind their glances were still unclear. As for himself, he was too tired to deal with his impending death. He tried to force his mind into thinking of it, but the mind was dominated by the muscles, and the muscles said they did not care. It merely occurred to him that if he should drown, it would be a shame. There were no hurried words, no paleness, no anger. The men simply looked at the shore.
"Now remember to get clear of the boat when you jump," said the captain.
From behind, the top of a wave suddenly fell with a loud crash, and it came roaring down upon the boat.
"Steady now," said the captain.
The men were silent.
They turned their eyes from the shore to the wave and waited. The boat slid up the incline, leaped at the furious top, bounced over it, and swung down the long back of the waves. Some water came in and the cook bailed it out. The next wave top then crashed upon them. The boiling flood of white water caught the boat and twisted it almost 90 degrees. Water swarmed in from all sides. The correspondent had his hands on the gunwale at this time, and when the water entered at that place, he swiftly withdrew his fingers, as if he objected to getting them wet. The little boat, drunk with this weight of new water, snuggled deeper into the sea.
"Bail her out, cook! Bail her out!" said the captain. "All right, captain," said the cook. "Now, boys, the next one will be it for us," said the oiler. "Be sure to jump clear of the boat."
The third wave moved forward, looking huge and furious. It swallowed the dinghy, and almost simultaneously the men fell into the sea. A lifebelt had lain in the bottom of the boat, and as the correspondent went over, he held this to his chest with his left hand.